Them feeding this cherry like me, so it's strange. My name is Lou and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I used to resent that Mama Lou stuff. Then I got to thinking, when I was in bars, they'd say, "Get that mother out of here." Well, Mama's better. Mama's better. I only got one story. Number one, I haven't been out nights for so long that I'm on a rush. Because I don't drive nights anymore. I stay home. And good God, I got out and got that night air and that old Willie Nelson song. "It's not life, ain't no good life, but it's my life." I wanted to go. I wanted to boogie, you know. I'll settle down in a minute. Maybe. You know, I was I'm an Okie, and when I was 18 years old, I lived in a fine home. Back, it was a good home. I don't mean fine like rich, but a loving home. And there was eight of we children, and I was the only misfit. But I always was. I was walking all the time going, if my mother would say go south, I'd go north. I lied when I didn't have to. I was a mixed-up little kid, even before I ever started drinking. And in high school, I know we lived out in the country, but I'd have to lie to go places. And I was going with this old boy Mama didn't like, so I said, "Mama, I'm going to go to the football game tonight, and I stayed in town with my sisters. We lived about a mile and a half out in the country. I stayed in town with my sister. Then I went out with this old boy, and he was a good old boy. He didn't do nothing, but he just was. My mother didn't like him. So I walked home the next morning, and I was feeling real good. So she said, "How was the football game last night, Lucille?" And I said, "Oh, it was fine, Mama." I said, "Well, we got beat. Tulsa beat the hell out of us." And all this sort of thing. And she let me describe it. Old J.C. Dobbins got hurt. And so she sat here and she said, "Lucille, when did they start playing football in the dark?" It didn't occur to me that she could look up over the, and see her, see that there wasn't lit up, you know. And she lit in on me, you know. But I did things. I knew I was going to get the hell kicked out of me. But it was worth it. It was worth it. And see, that was before I started drinking. I went on. I was fairly decent in school. When I was a senior in high school, something really bad happened to me. I didn't drink, smoked like a chimney. But when I was a senior in high school, something related to drinking got me, and a very tragic thing happened. And so shortly after that, I had a brother that was coming to California, and that was during the Depression, in about 1938. And the mama said, "Why don't you go out to California with your brother?" And so we came out here, and that was a very exciting time. It was during the Depression, but it was quite obvious that there was going to be a war. Hitler was just taking over in Europe, and it was an exciting time. Even so, we were poor, but we came out here, and God, there was jobs. You know, Jesus. The little town that I came from was about like, maybe Penryn, you know. And I hit this Los Angeles, and I said, "Jesus Christ, this is a big son of I love you, you know." It was for me. It was for me. Nothing scared me. And I still didn't drink because of the thing in high school. I ran across the north, but my mother said to me, "Now, Lucille, when you get out to California, don't you go out. If you see one of them sailors, you walk across the street, you know," because we didn't have no sailors back then in Oklahoma. I didn't know what a sailor was. I didn't know what he was supposed to do to me, but Yeah, if you see one of them sailors, you walk across the street. So I came out here and I looked up this old gal that I knew back in Oklahoma, and so we went to work and together. She said, "Let's do something." And I said, "Where's the sailors?" It was at Hamburger, that was in Los Angeles. She said it was Long Beach, Hamburger King, and that's what we called a pike out there. We went out there, and I was so disappointed, we picked up two little fuzzy-faced boys, and they didn't do nothing, you know. So I said, "Mommy, you missed the boat there," but that wasn't drinking. I'm trying to describe why that I say that I am an alcoholic, and I'm glad that I'm an alcoholic, because I would have gotten in a lot of trouble. I didn't know how to follow direction. I didn't know and didn't want to follow direction. And I messed around a while, and then there was a lot of things going on. I danced a little while in the chorus line, but then it got a little bit, Los Angeles was too much. All these old boys that think there's a bunch of Okies and Arkies and things coming out here getting these aircraft jobs, you know. And if they'd go with a little old showgirl, they thought they would, you know, had a Hollywood star, and we didn't know, but it was fun, but there was something about me that I knew I was going to get in trouble. I knew I was going to get in trouble because I was like a lost ball in tall weeds. I didn't know what to do with myself. I could walk the talk, but I couldn't act. I was scared. So I had this agent to book me up in a suburb of Gardena, and that was outside in a honky tonk. I was an MC it was an exciting time. But I met a guy that finally became my husband. But I wasn't afraid. I was afraid of those Los Angeles, those LA boys, you know. But my husband had just come from Missouri, and he talked by talk, and I knew he was going to take care of me. I didn't know that was what I was looking for. But he was a good old boy, you know. And my gal ain't going to be no dancer. You know, we going to get married and all that, so there ain't going to be nobody see you. And it was a strip joint, what it was. But hell, I had more clothes on when I was a stripper than these girls were at the beach now. I want to go up behind them and grab that string, you know. And the men too, but anyhow, Dick and I got together, and then he wasn't going to let me do this, so the aircraft was working and high, and so I got a job at Northrop Aircraft, and working in the data processing department, and nobody knew how to. They hired people to come out and train us, but I wanted to be, and I was a hard worker, and I liked it, and I worked myself up into a very good position at Northrop Aircraft over a period of time. I was supervisor of all the key punch operators in about 5 years, but that was okay. But in the meantime, Dick, see, the rum and Coca-Cola, the war had started. I married Dick, and there had been a war. And rum and Coca-Cola was the drink then. Dick would say, "Why don't you have a drink?" You know, and I said, "Oh, no, I don't want a drink." I didn't tell him what had happened. Don't want a drink, but so it looked pretty good. And so I had a rum and Coke one night, and I had two. And nothing bad happened. I felt good. It made me feel good. I was witty and clever. And I thought, man, this is okay. This is okay. So there was a long procession of this. I was a fun drinker. I had a lot of fun. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you, but I had a hell of a lot of fun. You know, I had this anticipation of going out to a party. Shit, I could, you know, man, here I'm gone. People would say, and I knew all the dirty jokes, and I knew all the good moves and all that thing. And people would say, boy, we're going to have a good time. Here comes Luke. Here comes Luke. And I could get drunk on that. I could get drunk on that. But it made me feel good. And so I thought I was, but this was a thing that I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun, and it didn't get me in trouble. But over a period of time, this is a progressive disease. A happy birthday to the birthday people, and for the new person, this is the only way to go. It's the only way to go. I didn't know that you kids are coming in here younger now, but God love you. God love you. Because you might be thinking you're having fun, and I did, but it got progressively worse. And at that time, there was a war on this time, and there was we played hard, but we worked hard. You know, the thing that really, if you didn't show up for work, you know, you was no good. You was a drunk. I'd go to work half dead. But I'd dropped this with something on my foot and couldn't walk, couldn't get in. So they said, okay, Lou. So got up the next day and I felt pretty good. And I thought, when I put these, and that was when they were wearing these sharp-toed shoes and then 4-inch heels, you know, my leg. And put that shoe on. And I thought, well, I cannot go in there and not limp. So, I knew I can't work and think about limping too. So I know I reached down and got some gravel and put it in one of my shoes, you know. So, and son of a bitch, I did have a sore foot then. I walked around that all night. And I had to go to the doctor for that. I was always outsmarting myself. Always outsmarting myself. But, and as I say, we worked hard and we played hard. But my drinking had progressed for quite a while. This was going on, and Dick didn't mind, because he would say, well, you work under a lot of pressure, that's why I have to get drunk, yeah. So he was a perfect enabler. He was a perfect enabler, and he took care of me. Anything that I would do. I got to where I'd kind of write hot checks and things like that, and because I couldn't support it. And I couldn't support my habit. And he had a good job, too, at the time. But I would say, well, you know, I won't do it anymore. And he'd say, if you do, I'm going to kick the shit out of you, but I'll pick him up today. Well, that's all I heard is I'm going to pick him up today. You know. I didn't care about that. I'm going to kick the shit out of you, you know. And he did. He backhanded me a time or two for some of the things. But the thing is, he was a perfect person to take, to let me, that's how I lasted so long with my drinking. But I was walking down the, I was liaison with the production in data processing. And the Air Corps had a contract with us. So usually about once a month they would meet and we would have to present some papers to the Air Corps, and but it would always be about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, we always had a martini for lunch, and that was okay. That was permissible. But one time some smart soul called the meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, but this time I was drinking in the morning. I was having a drink in the morning, but that was okay. Because I had a secretary at this time, and she knew what I was doing. But there was a thing, you didn't drink before 12 o'clock. This was a thing that only drunks drank before 12. So I went to this meeting this morning, and I was as prepared as I had ever been to present my papers, but I couldn't function. I was so, because I was, by this time, I was drinking a fifth of whiskey a day at working. And I wore dark glasses a long time before it became popular. Because I walked, but the only time you could see, my eyes would roll around a little bit. And But I walked and I talked okay. I walked and talked fine. But I was walking back, so I finally got through that thing, and walking back to my office that day, the most frightening thing in the world. Because something said, Lou, you're dependent on alcohol. You have to have a drink to function. I didn't know, but it scared me. So I didn't say I'm going to quit. I said I'm going to slow down. And then's when the shit hit the fan, when you try to slow down. You drunks know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's okay to drink and everything, but when you try to control your drinking after you've been that far, you can't do it. I've never seen one yet that can. It got worse. The bartender gave me one point, I had to go to work, and the bartender gave me some damn white. And man, I love that. Man, I'm telling you, I was walking tall. I was walking tall. I love that. And I went back to that bar again, and I said, give me some more of that stuff. Well, between the booze and the whites, I was hospitalized. So Dick said, well, you're going to quit that damn job, and you're going to stay home, and you're going to be a mom. Okay. So we got a child to take care of. Not adoption, but a little six-year-old girl. And he went out and got me a sewing machine, because I never sewed. And had this old gal come in and give me some sewing lessons. And I didn't care anything about sewing. I didn't care anything about that kid. I didn't care nothing. Because I could drink all I wanted to. I didn't have to get to put my makeup on. But I really wanted to quit. And I saw this for this child, but I couldn't do it. You all know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. I had my car keys in my hand. I was going to the liquor store, saying this. And I was a hog. I know that if I had a fifth of the house, I'd drink it. If I had a pint, whatever. But never. And so I'd be at the liquor store in the morning, early in the morning, and I knew they wasn't going to open till 6 o'clock. I never would. But I'm standing out there, it's about 6:10. And that son of a bitch sitting there counting his change, putting the papers up, and me sitting there dying. Standing there dying. He had opened that door, I hated that son of a bitch. You know, I was going to get him fired because a good customer standing out here with a hot check. That's the way it was. But you know, when he opened that door, and he knew what I wanted, and I'd give my little heart, and he knew Dick was going to pick it up. But I loved him, you know. I had that stuff. I'd get out in the car, and I'd that old stuff that you open it, and yeah, that stuff get in your mouth, lay down in the car, and a little bit. But this is the thing, and I always buy a half a pint. I was a half a pint drinker. However, I went back about five times a day, by the end of the day, I looked terrible. I looked like hell. And this little old man, this little wall, he said, why don't you buy a fifth? And, you know, why don't you buy a fifth? You know, and then I said, I'll have you know I don't drink that much. But anyhow, poor old Dick, that I'd go in there and I'd whine around a little bit and I'd say, Daddy, I've got some checks down there, you know. But I'm going to kick the shit out of y'all and we'll pick them up this time. And the poor old thing, he would go up and down that boulevard and say, don't sell her anything. They sold it to me. Because I knew he was a dummy. I talk back, I love that man. I love 50 years I spent with him. God love him. But he would pick him up. I knew he would do it. But I wanted to quit drinking when we got Shell, but I couldn't. I wanted to love that child, but I couldn't. And I didn't have to quit him. But when we was at Northrop, this was a long time in the 40s, They called all the supervisors in and they said, if you have people in your department who have a drinking problem, go to this little man here. And they introduced him to him, and he had a department there, and they could go to him, and he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he would help, you know, he would, we could send these people to these people, because you know, they had trained, but we all used an argue out here, and we were all drinking like them. But I didn't need that little man, but I know I would see him in the cafeteria. We'd see him around there, and I'd tell people, there's that little old man that, we'd act like we were drunk. And you know, that little man didn't say, he was just smiling, going about his business, you know. Smile. But you know what? When I had that whiskey fit on my kitchen floor, that little man, that's the only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, that little man had made a 12-step call on me when he, because my neighbor found me. I locked the door because I knew something bad was going to happen. This day, I knew something bad was going to happen, and I didn't want Shell to see me. She came home for lunch every day, and I waited till she got home for her lunch, and she left, and Dick would call me every day at noon to see if I was okay. But I locked the door when she went back to work, and that's the last I remember. So my neighbors had crawled in the window. Dick had called and he couldn't get me, and I'd taken the phone off of the hook. So my neighbor crawled in the window and she found me. And I was laying on my kitchen floor. I'd fouled myself from both ends. And I said the thing, call Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I lost my voice. I was blind. And so Alcoholics Anonymous was there. And then she called Dick and she called my doctor. This is where that I, God came into my life and I didn't know it. I was laying there, but my mind was as clear as it had ever been, or had been since. I knew I wasn't going to drink anymore. How in the hell did I know it? I couldn't see. I couldn't talk. Blah, blah, blah. Then the Dick came in, and the doctor came in, and Florence and somebody else from Alcoholics Anonymous was there. And Dick said, Doc, is she going to be this way the rest of her life? And our doctor said, I don't know, Dick. But the first time I had the feeling for another human being, I wanted to tell my husband it was okay. I loved him more than I ever did in my life. I didn't want him to hurt. I wanted him to know it was, and how did I know that it was going to be all right? In retrospect, I know that God had told me that, and I haven't wanted, that was removed from me at that time, the compulsion to drink, and that was over 32 years ago, and it still hadn't come back. However, Dick said, who are you ladies? And they said, we're from Alcoholics Anonymous. And bless his heart, he said, this is a private family matter. She's not an alcoholic. I'll take care of her. And Florence said, this old girl, she was an old oak. She said, how long have you been married to this girl? He said, 22 years. He said, you haven't done a very good job so far. Give us a chance. And so the doctor said, Dick, let's go outside, you know. And those girls cleaned me up. But that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. However, they didn't take me to the hospital. Every day the doctor would come home every night and the throw that B12, it was running in my arm. And, you know, our body is a beautiful thing. I weighed 98 pounds. I didn't have any hair because at one time I thought I would bleach it, and I bleached it, and it all fell out. And I have wine pores. I have a 98-pound, bald-headed woman. But I was happy because I knew I wasn't going to drink anymore. Every day, for about 3 weeks, somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous from the hole in the ground came out and saw me. They didn't have all these recovery homes and things then. God love them. I guess it's okay, but I'm glad that because I know I heard my doctor say, I can give her a shot. And Florence said, she don't need a shot. Let her suffer. Then she'll remember next time before she takes a drink. I heard everything that was said that day. Let her suffer. she won't die. Then maybe she'll think of this the next time she... Man, I'm laying here and I couldn't... But I went to the hole in the ground in Huntington Park, and I loved it. I was at home. They only had one toilet, and people would, it was open in the daytime. It wasn't a fellowship. It stunk, but I would have loved it. Those people were talking about things that I felt in my heart, but I'd never heard anybody say before. I didn't run around with a bunch of alcoholics. Our crowd wouldn't. But these people would say, they were talking about drinking when they didn't want to. Hell, I didn't. They couldn't quit. I didn't. I identified with those people, and I couldn't get enough of them. I wanted to divorce Dick and get an apartment and move over there next to the hole in the ground. Next to the hole in the ground. But this, so I couldn't work anything. I couldn't do anything, so we had to have a housekeeper to come in and take care of the house, because I couldn't do anything. I was practically helpless, and take care of poor little Shell. But I stayed there, but I was safe. It was safe at the hole in the ground. My home was a very bad place for me, because this is where I did my bad drinking at the end. See, when I quit working, then I didn't have to put the dress in place. I'd say, I ain't going to ever put no makeup on anymore. I can just drink. And I wore the same clothes, would forget to take a bath. But when I wanted to be over there with those people, with you people, you knew what I was talking about. Now I would like, and then they would talk about them steps. And then it wasn't a fellowship, it was open in the daytime, but they had meetings at night. So we were hanging around there in the daytime, and because I was safe there. The slipperoos, I knew them. They would hang around in the daytime. They weren't working. They would talk about, we'd sit there and tell lies. But see, they were my kind of people. I loved them. So I'd say, it's okay for you to hang around there in the daytime, Lou. But you get your ass back at a meeting at night. That's what also. So I would go because she told me what to do, and I had to do that. And I'd sit there, and in the daytime we would sit there and tell these big lies of Icebox Betty and Whiskey Bill and those people. And sometimes I'd say, where's old Icebox Betty? Well, she's drunk. Where's Whiskey Bill? But they'd come back. Old dude would let us hang around there and tell lies. We'd take up a collection and go out and get some bologna and one man and some day-old bread and some onion. And Mar, you have the flatulence was good. You couldn't hang around there. He'd make us get out and take a walk around the block. But I was happy. I had a lovely home. But I didn't want to be there. I wanted to be there. But then Florence would say, Lou, stick with the winners. Now, I'd go to meetings at night, and the people were talking about different things, you know. They were talking about program. Who in the hell wants to talk about program when you have some good things to talk about, you know, and lies to tell? We all lied. If a new drunk is, if their lips are moving, they're lying. I lied for a long time after I got sober. I stretched the truth. I made a story a little more interesting. But I get caught in it. But there was a difference. She'd say, hang around with some of these winners. Quit hanging around with them losers. And I said, damn it, I didn't know what a loser was. They was at a meeting. They was going to AAA. And so I got sick of hearing that. So we would sit there, and then there was different tone at the night meeting. And those people get up there and talk about a program and steps, and I wasn't interested in that. It took me a long time to really get interested in that, because my brain was nearly fried. And they'd get up there, and if they'd talk too long about steps on, so I'd go back to the toilet and flush the toilet real loud, let them know I didn't, you know. So my sponsor said to me, Lou, you go pee before the meeting. and don't leave that chair. So I didn't. But I got so sick of it. Stick with the winter stuff. Stick with the winners. So I finally said, you pick me some winners and I'll stick with them. Because I didn't know the difference. And she says, no, Lou, I can't do that. You're going to have to make your own judgment about what you want from these people. Well, from that moment, I became a very judgmental bitch. I began to get the gossip of who, I knew who was screwing who was stealing. And some of those, I knew all this, you know, but these were the things. So I was judgmental. I know I was going to a meeting one time and driving a little early. I was driving over on the motel row. Figaro at that time was a motel. We went over and I saw a man and a woman going into a motel. It was about 6 o'clock. And I thought, well, I didn't know they had a thing going. You know, I thought, well, my God. I just couldn't wait to get over there to tell people that old so-and-so was moteled up in the middle of the day. And I did. So felt like an ass, though, when they came in a little bit later with their little sick drunk, you know. They'd been on a 12-step call. But that's all I knew that you went to motels for. But not 12-step calls. But finally, this thing started slipping in. It started falling in place. I wanted what these people had, but it takes a lot. I'll tell you, it's not easy for a new person to get into this and to change, because we have to change. I had to change. You don't have to do a damn thing. Yeah, I get judgmental again. I'll tell you, we have to do it. I had to change my way of thinking. And I had thought a certain way for 40 years, and you don't change that overnight. I couldn't change that overnight. It took some time. So the first three steps were, Florence stayed with me on this for a long, long time. I got God in my life. I didn't realize that he had removed that. The greatest gift I ever had was when God removed that compulsion to drink from me on my kitchen floor. That I knew I wasn't going to drink anymore. That's the only gift I have, and I'll protect it with my life. Okay, I think a lot of us, when we come in here, we have that. But then a bunch of drunks behind us got together, and they gave us some steps to go by. This is how I protect this gift that God gave me. We have a daily reprieve and contingent on how we feel with God. And I know this. I know this now, but it didn't happen overnight. But thank God, see, it's an exciting journey. Alcoholics Anonymous is the most exciting thing that ever happened to me. You know, I used to say this, and Dick would get madder than hell. Look what I did to you, and you go down there and tell me. But it is. It changes. It changes. We have changes all the time. Today, and things are going to happen. Things are going to happen. But all that I needed to know, Florence told me, that was between the covers of the big book and the 12 by 12. And I believe this. I read other things now. But that is my Bible. And there is no situation that will come up in any of our lives that cannot be rectified, or it's not described in that big book. I've lost parents. I've lost my daughter. She's out on. I lost my husband. I did a lot of things. I had to give up my home in Southern California because I got emphysema and had to come up here. A lot of things happened to me. But all these things have happened, and so that my answer is in the big book. I don't know about getting on my knees. I have knee surgery and I can't get on my knees, but I sure do talk to God. I sure talk to God a lot. And I wouldn't know a fear about if I had to. But I do know that this is where it all begins. It all begins with coming in here and working the steps. But first, I would suggest that the new people, a sponsor cannot be too important, because we can't think for ourselves when we first come in here. If Florence didn't think for me, hadn't thought for me, and I thank God for the seventh tradition, her money doesn't change hands in here. You know, we're self-supporting too, and you know, we're emotionally self-supporting too. You know, I might just hate somebody's guts like hell, you know, but say, and I hate them, I don't hate nobody, but I think that a-hole, you know. But somebody else, you know, if that person gets in trouble, we're there. We are the most close-knit, we're the most exclusive bunch of people I've ever known. Because nothing can take anything away from us. I know I came in here tonight, and well, there's a great big old strapping boy sitting over here. When I first came to Auburn, there was no meetings. I've been up here about 13 years. I've been sober 13 years, came up here. And there wasn't any AA meetings. Well, they had dry diggings. There was a few people over there. And I lived out in the country. But then there was a few meetings over to the center, they called it there, behind the, and I walked in there, and I didn't like what was there, see, because it wasn't tradition. I had become tradition person by this time. And got here, this big old Ed, he was Big Ed. He came in there, he was remembering Carol Kennedy. A few of us were hanging around there. We said, hell, let's get an AA meeting going. And you know, where we could, and so we did. We did. And but the sponsor is to me, the sponsor, it will lead us into a good sponsor. It's love. It's love. This gal loved me, I knew from the time, because like when I would I'd do some crazy things, because I wanted to get Dick's attention. I wanted him to pay more attention to me. Because I went through, if you're married to a non-alcoholic, if I can just pass this on, after about 6 or 7 months, Dick said, well, do you have to still go to those meetings, you know? I said, yes, I'm devoted to those meetings. He had to raise that kid. He'd stay there. But, and all at once, he got jealous of this. He was a human. And I know one time he said to me, after all,